Thank you, everyone. We're getting close to lunch, and we have breakouts to do, so I'm going to be pretty quick, I hope, unless you guys get me ranting on something. So I'm Dr. Trevor Cottrell. I'm the Director of Human Performance at the Ironman Sports Medicine Institute. I come to this position. I was a professor for 12 years. I chaired an athletic therapy degree program in Canada at Sheridan College, and I created a new kinesiology degree in exercise science and health promotion. And then I came here on sabbatical and I decided to stay. It sure is beautiful down here. Anyway, a little bit about me. I started lifting weights about 37 years ago when I was a wee little tot, and I just became a bit of a weight room junkie. And I've competed in almost all the strength sports. I've coached at all levels from 8 years old to 80. I've worked with pro. I've worked with Olympic athletes. I've worked with high schoolers. But my favorite population is that youth population. How many people here work with a youth population? So junior high, high. Exactly. My favorite group. You have the ability, you have the power to mold and sculpt these individuals and make them into really good people and really good athletes. I look at my role and everything I do as an educator, and I think a lot of you probably feel the same way about what you do, even though many of you are in more of a rehabilitation context. So my goal today is to talk a little bit more about education, both coach education and athlete education, and a term called physical literacy. It's not a term you hear much here. In Canada, it's a very cliche term. You know, everybody's talking about physical literacy this, physical literacy that. But the idea is that in school, we teach numeracy and we teach literacy, so the old math and reading, writing. But we also should be teaching physical literacy, how to use their bodies. Everybody coming out of your schools should be able to read, write, and move. And when we talk about moving, we're talking about basic movement skills. Can they squat? Can they control the core and bend forward at the hip? Can they lunge? Can they jump? Can they push? Can they pull? Can they skip? Can they swim? Can they bike? Those are all examples of physical literacy. So I want you to think about the environment you're in and the athletes you work with. When they leave you, whether it's junior high or high school, are they physically literate? We spend a lot of time in our physical education programs teaching how to play football. It's all about character building and that team camaraderie, and that's great. But do we actually have athletes that are better physically and are going to live longer, better lives because of it? Or did we just beat the tar out of these athletes over the last 6 years? So I want to, hopefully by the end of this, give you the tools to understand how important it is to build physical literacy amongst your students and athletes, as well as encourage your coaches to take a physical literacy approach when working with their athletes, and then give you tools for how to do that in an easy, efficient manner. So the argument I often get in this environment, and I tell you, I have kids at junior high here in KDISD. I have a daughter in high school at KDISD. Both are in the athletics program. Both of them come home with stories of horror from the weight room. Any of you have stories of horror from your weight rooms? How many of you have dealt with a weight room injury? What's the most common injury? Shout it out. Why? One of these, right? Or one of these, right? Seen it? How many times have you seen it? Every day. Every day, and it's embarrassing, it's shocking, it's sinful, and quite frankly, it should be illegal. It is wrong to teach a kid how to lift like that under load. And if there's ever a lawsuit that's filed, I'll be at the front of the line testifying that what that coach allowed to happen was wrong. We wouldn't allow those things to happen out on the field, on a basketball court. We wouldn't let them play on a freshly mopped court. That for some reason in the weight room, we allow them to put a heavy weight on their back and do this. And cheer, yeah, good job, you did great. No, and as coaches, if you're working with coaches, they're responsible for when they're done at that high school, when they go on to that next level, that kid should be able to be functional at that next level. I used to be a strength coach at the collegiate level, and we'd take 3-4 months to teach a kid how to lift weights after they'd already been lifting weights for 6 years, because nobody actually taught them how to do it right. The excuse you always get is twofold. One, I don't have enough time. There's too many kids. Have you heard it? Have you seen it? You know the weight room, 50 kids in one weight room. That's just an excuse. I work right now with kids that come and see me maybe once a week, twice a week. Now, I get them for an hour, sometimes an hour and a half, but once or twice a week. In the school system here, it's a beautiful thing. It's the most perfect situation in the world. You've got every kid captured 5 days a week for up to 40 minutes a day. That's an incredible opportunity to develop physical literacy. And therefore, every kid should be able to move well by the time they're done, they're 6 years in your school board. There is no reason for it. 40 minutes a day is an incredible amount of time. So time is not a reason. Space, room, number of people, yes, that is sure, it's a hamstring. But there's so many ways you can break it down and still maintain coaching competency in the weight room. There's things you can do just one day. All we're going to do is teach you one movement, how to do one movement well. Maybe even a push-up. You saw Coach Fitzgerald earlier today said, oh, my kids, they just do push-ups. Yet we dive right into that bench press, doing this stuff. Teach your kid how to push-up. There's so many kids in grade 10 who still can't do a push-up. Inexcusable. There's so many easy ways to do that. So they always say that there's not enough time, it's too many kids, and the kids are just too immature. Those are cop-outs. But if you take that little bit of time and you do it right, you can see there's so many advantages. Of course, the kid actually learns how to move. They're less prone to injury. Then when they leave and they go to that next level, anybody looking at them says, that kid's ready. That kid's been working on it. They've been doing homework. They've been coached well. Compared to when oftentimes we got kids coming in and we do, sometimes your first week working with some of these red shirts, you do a squat test. And you're going, oh my God, oh, this kid's going to take forever. So take the time, get them moving well, and get them ready for their sport. So what we're going to deal with in my breakout session is how to coach a large group on a couple lifts. The two major lifts, you've already heard a lot about them today. One is the squat, the other is the deadlift or the hinge. Bread and butter, quintessential lifts, all of your athletes seem to be doing them, and the majority of them don't do them well. You heard from Ryan, he's going to talk about assessing mobility and implementing the squat technique. I'm going to talk about how to coach 15, 20, 30 kids at once on how to do a hinge or a squat. How many kids in your weight room are deadlifting like that? Yeah, quite often. Quite often. Problem is, you have a circuit set up, they're at one station, they move to the next station, you don't even adjust the weight oftentimes, it's just whatever weight's on the bar, you go with it. And half the kids can't move that weight, so they just turtle up. Turns into a turtle back. Right? And that's where you get the back injuries. So the deadlift or the hip hinge is really the movement that has to be worked on first. Young kids, 10, 11, 12 years old, cannot control their core. They just cannot. There's very few, maybe 1 in 10 can get into this position, a neutral spine position. It is very difficult for them. Yet we all know that deadlifts are important. They should be deadlifting. Deadlifting is a great functional exercise. It transfers to everyday life. Some of you have been at courses, lift with your legs, not with your back, right? Lift with your legs. Well, how many people in this room can actually get in this position? I bet you a lot of you can't get past here, right? So it's a functional exercise. It trains your whole body top to down, posture train, everything up the back, hamstring loading. That's critical for any kind of sprinting or driving of the lower body. Sport transfer to all kinds of movements. It transfers to jumping, hitting, tackling, cutting. There's so many applications for it, and it teaches this core control that's so important. When we talk about deadlifting, often we talk about conventional sumo. Conventional is where the feet are inside the hands. Sumo is where the hands are inside of the feet. There's a time and place for either. Usually the conventional is the most preferred because it transfers to things like the power clean, and it's more of a functional athletic stance. So why shouldn't you deadlift? I've worked with strength coaches who have never deadlifted any of their athletes. I'll never do a pull or a deadlift with any of my athletes, they say. Why? It's too high risk. I've hurt too many backs doing it. Again, cop out. I understand it is a high risk activity if done wrong. If you leave a bunch of kids in a room and you put a weight on a bar, tell them to deadlift, they're going to do it wrong. They're going to hurt themselves. That's a cop out. You're a coach. You got to teach them how to move that bar well. And it works really well if you just put a little bit of time into it. So the other problem with deadlifts, though, is if you do, even if you're lifting with good technique, if you do too much hinge movement under load, some of you have probably experienced it, just like working in the garden all day. Oh, it gets spasm. You get crampy. The back, once it fatigues, it goes into spasm. Once it's in the spasm, sometimes it takes a long time to get it out of spasm. So you got to be careful of that. And so any kind of excessive back loading will put loading on that ligamentous system, that wee little tiny ligaments, you see them up there, they're so small and so weak, they can only handle a handful of kilograms on them and they can easily get sprained. And then of course you have your annulus and you can have herniation issues and those sorts of things. So there is concern there. But again, if you are maintaining that neutral spine position, neutral spine again, it's me standing right here, normal S-shaped curve, if whatever I'm getting into, I maintain that position, then that spine is supported in a safer zone, and it's less likely to get injured. So if you want to teach a lot of movements, vertical jump, for example, the vertical jump position, here's the takeoff of the vertical jump. Notice, deadlift. Heads up tackling. I worked with Tyke football. I coached Tyke football forever. Tyke, well, you guys call it Pop Warner. And we had to teach heads up tackling. You're familiar with heads up tackling? It's a new model. Everybody's got to do it. Well, Tyke football, they have these, trying to find a place for that. They have these big helmets on. They're about this tall. They're really weak. Heads up tackling. So you're going down, facing the numbers, grab. You're going to lift this guy, and then you're going to push forward. First of all, the kids can't keep their head up because of the helmet. Secondly, none of them could squat. They were like this. Third, even if they could put a bag of groceries in their hands, they couldn't stand up with it. Right? Yet we're heads up tackling, and the coaches were, oh, we got to teach this. We got to get them strong before they can do heads up tackling. But you can see in that picture, once you can get into these positions, now you can really do heads up tackling. So if half of your grade 9 kids can't even get into this position under load, how do you ever expect them to do heads up tackling? So we're going to talk about deadlift form. We're going to spend a little bit of time talking about the deadlift, where it's an extension of the knee followed by the extension of the hip, or the Romanian deadlift, or the RDL, which is just flexion at the hip, which we often call the hip hinge. The RDL is kind of the quintessential back training exercise or deadlift training exercise, which everybody in this room should do on a daily basis in order to teach postural control when lifting loads safely. We do not take much time in training kids. My son, grade 7 at a local high school, just minutes down the road, he learns this. What's that called? Anybody do it? Compare that to this. So the stiff-legged deadlift, back in the 1970s, Arnold Schwarzenegger popularized it in the movie Pumping Iron, standing on the end of a bench, three plates on the bar, legs locked out, rounding out, and they called it a hamstring training exercise. And some of your coaches in your school districts are teaching grade 7 kids how to do that. My son's been a competitive Olympic weightlifter since he was 10 years old. He has excellent technique. He got yelled at by the coach because he didn't go down low enough and round his back. Are you okay with that? I hope not. So we're going to work on those two lifts. We're going to talk about all the different coaching cues. So there's a variety of coaching cues, and so I'm not going to talk to them. We're going to go through them in the lab. And we're going to talk a lot about the progressions. This is the flow chart. So many people, and there's progressions for every exercise you can do. And this is education. It's just like math. You teach 1 plus 1 equals 2 before you take the square root of 349. That's a progression. So in physical literacy, there's progressions to everything you teach. There's flow charts of learning. So you get a kid in the gym for the first day, and you say, okay, I want to see, let's do some deadlifts. Everybody sit down like this. Put your hands on the side of your knees. And right away you'll see a bunch of kids do that. Okay, what do? Well, there's a flow chart for that. You work your way back. So you see on this progression, the blue, it doesn't really come out as very blue, but the deadlift is the goal exercise. If they can't do that, then you can work your way backwards. There's two different streams you can go. You can go the Romanian deadlift way, or you can go a rack deadlift way. If they can't do that, if they're still too weak, there's still earlier things you can do to build the strength so that they can work their way up. Once they can do a deadlift and they're good at that, now where do you take it to generate more rate of force development, similar to what Ryan was talking about? So that's the progression flowchart we're going to work through in the lab. We're going to show you some teaching tools for the Romanian deadlift. Some people use a dowel in the back. I'm not a huge fan of it. I'll tell you why. The good morning exercise, a little bit better in some cases, but it doesn't always work. I'll tell you why. But we're going to work through those as tools for training the deadlift. And then we're going to talk about the coaching process. So you get a bunch of people in the room. How do you manage them? First of all, how do you say, what happens so often is, guys say, I want you to do a bunch of deadlifts. Okay, grab that bar, pick it up. They don't tell them why they're doing it. They don't show them how to do it properly. They don't assess any skill level. So that's the first thing. Get a bunch of people in the room. We're going to do deadlifts. It's a great exercise for explain what you're doing. This is what it looks like. Okay, everybody, I want you to all stand back. I want you to put your hands at the side of your body. I want you to reach down and touch the side of your leg. Okay, you're no good. You're going to go down here. Well, you don't say you're no good. You're going to go down here. You're going to be in this group. So we're going to teach you how to manage that, and then we're going to show you how to progress based off skill level. The bottom line with the deadlift is teaching the neutral spine. That's what they have to learn at a young age, as early as possible. Understanding great in 9, 10, 11-year-old boys and girls, it's really hard to teach. So you have to take time to develop that skill. And then the squat. We've already heard a lot about the squat, but it's a similar kind of process as in the deadlift. So the squat, a phenomenal exercise, but you saw in the previous videos and you see in those pictures, there's many different variations of the squat. Some of you have heard squats are bad for the knees. I used to do talks back in Arizona when I was doing my grad work there for the Arizona Physical Therapy Association on the squat, and people would be screaming at me from the audience saying, "That's wrong. People shouldn't squat. It's bad for the knees." Anybody here remember those days? Yeah. Remember, there was always knee extensions, right? Everybody, knee extensions. I remember in undergrad learning knee extensions is the key for ACL rehab. That's all you did. Squats, ooh, dangerous. You're going to hurt your knees. Well, all of a sudden now, squats are okay, but there's still a lot of mythology around it. How deep should you go? Knees over the toes? What angle should your feet be at? Should you even wear a belt? All kinds of mythology around it. And understand that there's many different ways to approach the squat. The squat technique we prefer is on the left, but understand that that weightlifter in the middle, he's one of the best squatters in the world. You can't walk up to him and say, "Hey, that's a really bad squat. You shouldn't squat like that." Because that squat for him is just fine. It gives him world championship medals. And the guy on the far right, you know who that guy is? Arnold. That's Arnold, right? Round back. He's got these little clam digger shoes on. Heel elevated on a 2x4 buffalo bar. But you know what? One of the best bodybuilders of all time. So again, are you going to tell him he's squatting bad? Understand that there's different variations. But the goal we're looking for is on the left. So squats are a beautiful exercise. We've heard about it. Functional exercise, transfers to a lot of sport, transfers to sprinting, jumping, helps prevent injury. It's used as a valuable rehabilitation tool. When we're talking about squats, usually we're talking about a back squat, front squat, overhead squat. And we see squats everywhere in daily life. You're squatting to get out of your chair. You're squatting to get out of your car. You're squatting to get off the toilet. You're squatting whenever you're jumping. You're squatting when you're tackling. So we use squats a lot as a training tool. It's kind of the main training tool we use. But people are always afraid, well, we're going to hurt our knee. You know, shear, there's lots of shear. And you heard Ryan earlier, deal with the shear. Yeah, there's shear. There's shear walking downstairs. There's shear when you're running and jumping. There's shear everywhere. And you want to teach them how to control that knee under shear. And the shears are well within tolerable limits. There's all kinds of research on that. So we don't worry about that too much. They also worry about the compression. Oh, your meniscus, compression with rotation. Yeah, but when you increase compression, you actually reduce shear, and you actually, your meniscus cups that femur a little bit better. So usually not a big issue. And the rates of osteoarthritis in weightlifters is no different than the average population. So it's really not a big issue. The big issue with squatting, as mentioned earlier, was patellotendinopathy. Just doing too much. Too much, too soon, too often. So in reality, it's a fine exercise, but if it does hurt, there's all kinds of alternatives. So these are the cues we're going to talk about when teaching good squat technique, and you can see a good squat position here in this slide. Here's classic examples of bad techniques. The main things you'll see, knees coming in, very common. Coming on the toes, knees coming in, very common. Often that's joined by a little bit of a soft back, very common. Your high school lineman, big kid, beefy kid, lifts a lot of weight, strong guy, right? No, he's incredibly weak. You get a grade 9, 10 kid who weighs over 250 pounds, he's weak, weaker than weak. Even though he moves more weight than everybody else, he's the weakest guy on the team relative to body weight. The reason he squats like this is because he doesn't have the strength to do that. He can't get out of a parallel squat position. He's not strong enough. You make him stand on a 12-inch box and do a strict step down, he can't do it, which means he can't do a lot of exercise in the daily life. So you want to make sure that they're not doing that good morning position. The picture at the bottom, that's a classic butt wink. How much butt wink is allowed? A little bit at the bottom maybe, but if you're getting it as a cross parallel, you're getting that back soft, no. I've dealt with so many athletes, I've said, oh, I don't have time to fix them. Let them go. They're going to hurt their back. I guarantee it. As soon as they get under enough load, the back will get hurt. So you got to fix these bad techniques. Here's the progression flow chart we use for squatting. So again, the back squats, let's call that our quintessential goal exercise. If they aren't able to back squat, you got to work your way back real quick. And in fact, most times when you start with a young athlete, you don't even start with any weight. You start them with body weight squats. That's where you start them with. And if they can't do that, then you work your way back from there. But it's important that you understand that the back squats are quite a few steps down the road. Before you put a bar on the back with 45s, you should probably consider checking all these other stop points before it. And understand there's all kinds of variations to do it. Some people say, well, we don't even have access to the weight room. We don't have time. You do not need a lot of weight in a young 11 to 14-year-old in order to get a squat workout. There's so many ways, and some of you in our little lab today, if you go after a little bit, you're going to be sore for 3 days just from squatting your own body weight all the way down, all the way up, 5 or 6 reps. So in your young athletes, you can get just a wonderful workout using just body weight for a couple years even in some cases. You don't need a lot of weight to do it. So we're going to work through all these different squat variations. I'm not talking through the slides. These are for your purpose to hang on to. We're going to talk about supported squats and the value that is in teaching people to get down. So often a kid in ACL rehab, I see this all the time, they just stop here. And I've seen a lot of PTs say, oh, that's just, hamstring tightness, or, you know, that's just the mobility of the knee. No, that's usually weakness. They don't have the strength or confidence to get below there because they'll collapse. They'll do that as soon as they get below it. And you'll see it on a single leg too. As soon as they get below here, they'll just sit down. And so it's important that you use things like a supported squat to give them the safety and security they need to find that bottom position. Then once they can do that, they can do bodyweight squats. And as soon as they go to bodyweight squats, after doing supported squats, they'll start rounding again. So overhead squats is one of the fixes for that we'll talk about. And or goblet squats are also a useful tool to load that position and maintain back control. And then you work your way to barbell squats. We'll talk a little bit about spotting. Most of you are probably pretty aware of that. But just so we can quickly educate your kids on how to safely spot a squat, I still see garbage in the way. I see people spotting by grabbing the bar, which if you're a big, strong guy and they're a weak person, that might work. But I saw a guy try and do that with 300 pounds, and he dragged it down his shin and ripped the skin off top to bottom. I've seen guys try and squat by grabbing the rib cage, basically tickling the guys who came up, and the guy dumped the weight right down on the guy's arms. So there's all kinds of bad ways to spot, and we're going to talk about good ways to spot. And again, with this squat, there's a coaching process where you want to introduce the movement, demonstrate the movement, assess their skill level, then teach the progressions and progress them based off technique. So the take home is take the time to teach proper technique right from the get-go in young populations, and then only allow loading as technique allows. It's such a simple recipe. There's people worried, well, I got to send them off to Seven Lakes strong or else the coach won't think I'm doing my job. You know what? They will get so strong if you teach them for the first month or two how to move properly. They will be stronger than anybody is strong. But if you don't teach them right away how to move properly, they'll always be intrinsically weak at some position. They may move a lot of weight, but it won't be good. It won't be done well, and they're at higher risk. I've seen so many people take the time to relearn how to, for example, squat or deadlift properly. At first, their weights go down, but after 3-4 months, they're the strongest person in the room because now they've removed all these inefficiencies and they can use the muscles that are intended to be used for that movement and maximize the load that they lift. Okay, so thank you for your time. I look forward to seeing you. I'll be up on stage for the breakouts.